and welcome to episode 96 of the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Breakroom. I'm your host, Brad Scheffler. This week on the show, I'm joined by Claudio Zavala Jr. Claudio is best known for creating the hashtag and movement Sing a Song. He's also an instructional technology coach in Texas focused on integration of EdTech for creativity and student voice. I did not get the chance to meet him in person at ISTE, but lots of my friends were talking about him and bringing him back into my mind, so I reached out and asked him to be on the show. Claudio and I talk about being a technology coach, we talk about Sing a Song, education's focus on results and not the learning journey, how we can start to make change happen in education, why all teachers should connect with others on social media, and how some lessons are about more than just woodshop. So, sit back and enjoy episode 96 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Claudio Zavala Jr. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I am your host, as always, Brad Scheffler, and I'm excited today. I get to talk to somebody who I've known about for a long time and has been involved in what I am describing in the notes previously as a movement in education. And I don't know if he would allow that term for himself or not, but I'm going to throw it out there anyways. And I'm joined today by creator of Sing a Song, Claudio Zavala. How's it going, man?
Hey, how you doing, man? A movement. I've actually heard several people say that. I let other people say it. I won't say it myself.
Fair enough. Yeah. So, Claudio, for my audience who don't know who you are, could you give a little intro to who you are and your space in education?
Sure. So, my name is Claudio Zavala Jr. I'm an instructional tech coordinator in a district in Texas, Duncanville, Texas. It's a small district just outside of Dallas, with about 13,000 students. So, my role there is to work with teachers and help them integrate technology in the classroom, whether it's like we have initiatives and it's like, oh, these are the things that we bought, we need them to learn how to use. My passion more is to help teachers use tools to really spark creativity in students in any subject.
Cool. I like that. That's good. The role of an instructional technology coach is always fun, right? Like I'm an instructional tech coach for a specific school. So okay. I get to stay on one site and work with that staff on repeat. And our district has some instructional coaches at the district level as well, but it's a little bit different role to be bouncing around and get assigned to other district projects and things like that. I get to really niche down on my own staff and recognize their needs. How do you like working for a sort of larger space?
It's challenging because there are, let's see, 18 campuses and there's three of us, and that is not enough to really help out the campuses. You know, it's one of those things where if we may be at one campus and we may not get to another campus for if we were to do rotations, it may take 3-4 weeks before we cycle through the next campus just because of the number of us. So I work right now at the approach that I'm taking is one of those where it's the squeaky wheel gets the grease kind of right now. So those that are like, hey, Claudio, can you come over here and we want to do this? And I'm like, okay. So that's kind of the where I'm kind of at. Mainly I've been, this past school year, I kind of stationed myself at the high school. There's a tech coach there, I think kind of similar to your role. And so kind of work with her. And I like that because then I get to work more with the teachers there and every once in a while with students, which the opportunity to work with students, share and help them. That's always neat. Having been away from the classroom for some time now.
Yeah. I know. The biggest thing about going into coaching to me, the biggest consideration when people talk to me about it is always, can you survive outside the classroom? Like, can you go without that thing? And I don't know what to call it other than, I always call it the fix, but can you go without your fix of classroom student interaction? Because there's something about that I don't know that you realize you miss it as much as you do until you start to miss it, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's easy to feel frustrated by the classroom, but man, there's something about it that I just jones for.
Oh yeah, yeah. I agree. This gives me the opportunity to get that fix. You know, like you're saying, teachers. It's my wife's a teacher as well, so she's worn out. They have a lot of demands on them, and sometimes I'm like, man, that's something that part I don't miss. You know, and but the time to be like, man, there's some really great tools out there, and I was like, if I was in a classroom, this is what I would do, and this is what I would do. But then they're like, oh, but then I have all that other stuff that's not fun.
All of the other things.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Sing a Song, because this I think popped into my. I became aware of it a couple years ago now, and it seems like it's just been growing and growing and growing, and it's kind of its own beast now.
Yeah. So
start with what is Sing a Song?
Okay.
My audience, and then we'll go from there.
Sounds good. So this hashtag Sing a Song. So if you just, hashtag, like you're going to post on Twitter, a couple years back, I created this, spot on this application called software Flipgrid, and basically what it is you'll open up this link and there's a green plus button, you click on it and you share a song, and that's kind of the basics of what you do. Click it, sing a song, record yourself singing a song video, and then it's there, and if you want to share it on Twitter, go ahead and share it. So that's basically what it is now. Give you the background of kind of how it started. A couple of years ago, I was driving to work and listening to the radio, and just got to the point where it's like, man, there's just so many people upset at each other, angry at each other. It's like we just can't get along. So I kind of got like, you know what? I posted a tweet and I said, what would happen if we just all sang a song together? And it was basically a question on Twitter. And a friend of mine, she's like, hey, Claudio, you should check out this Flipgrid, put it on there, and then share it again. And I was like, well, what is that? So click on Google it. And I was like, oh, okay, this seems like it's a video thing. So click on it. I was like, So, okay, I'll ask the question. But then it was one of those where like, well, if I'm going to ask people to sing a song, I probably should sing a song myself. to give a little background so I teach, but I'm also a musician myself. So I'm a drummer, and if most drummers don't sing. They're in the background just sitting. They may sing, but they're not, lead singers that I think there's a few bands out there that I know that where the drummer was, I think the Romantics maybe one, I'm not sure, but drummers don't sing. And so I was like, you know what, I'll go ahead and sing. And, it was, a song by Earth, Wind and Fire, Sing a Song, when you're down and out, sing a song. So I said, you know what, it took me a couple times to rehearse it, to make sure I wasn't squeaking. And I was like, oh boy. Okay, now I got to share this. And it was one of those where I was like, I got to make myself vulnerable. Do I? And I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. So I posted the video, and I actually asked my friend, I said, hey, since you asked me to do this, I need you to sing a song. So she did as well. The folks at Flipgrid jumped on it. The people at the offices were singing, posting video, and then like fast forward two years now, there's over, I think the last I looked, 30,000 views. So people viewing other people singing, there's a lot of lurkers out there that's like, oh, this is neat, I don't want to do it. But there's been over 1,500 folks that have added their song. And so what started off as just the teachers doing it, and then there was a teacher that said, hey, can my students sing? And I said, yes, absolutely. So then students would do it in class. There's some students that would jump on at home. And it started kind of like just sing any song. And then I said, whoa, this this thing's not going to last. So after 2 weeks, I go, let me make this thematic. Let's do 80s. Let's do country, which that one actually took a while to post about country, which one of the most popular ones. And so every week was a different topic. Then I got to the point where I was like, man, it's hard to do this. I'm working. I got a full-time job, and it was almost a job in itself. And so started using tools like TweetDeck. I was like, well, I'm going to schedule these out. So it'll just come out automatically. And right now during the summer, it's kind of one of those summer break things, but I just put like summer jams. It's just, you know, just jump on and add a summer jam. And so two years now going into it. And it's kind of like a little plateau of it. So I get a sprinkling of a song here and there, but you know what, it's whenever someone just wants to feel down and out, like, you know what, I'm gonna go jump on a sing a song, hashtag sing a song, and add a song. So people will share with me, I was like, you know what, that this has been an amazing thing for my students. I asked them, what was the most amazing thing we did all year? And they all said, sing a song. That was like amazing. And she was like, we did so many other things, and I can't believe they said sing a song. But they were like, she was like, it was just amazing. She said a lot of students in her class who were very shy and very not, did not participate, this was their jam. This was their way to step out. And she's like, the students, I have students that are not the same anymore. And this was the impetus to that. And I was like, wow, it was just one of those things where like, let's just see what happens. And it's kind of taken a life of its own, and, just keep it going.
Yeah. You know, I love when something sort of occurs naturally like that, you know, where it's just sort of this meh, you know, I've had a lot of those thoughts on the way to school, like you said, where it's just kind of like, hey, I should try this or I should do that. And, you know, sometimes you throw a tweet out into the ether and it becomes something, sometimes it doesn't. But when I hear, you know, I heard while I was at ISTE, it's like Mike Washburn is talking about Sing a Song, and John Spike is talking about Sing a Song. And, you know, I talked to a bunch of people, you know, I just talked to Scott Nunes for the podcast last week, and he mentioned it, if I remember right. It's like, it's that thing that keeps coming up. But what's interesting is when it comes up, there's like a smile on people's face.
That's
it's this
cool
thing they're excited to talk about. So I love that it kind of starts from this tweet about, you know, hey, people are angry. I wonder what would make them happy again.
Yes.
And now it's this thing that, you know, generally people talk about with a smile on their face, which is so cool to have this organically, naturally created thing do the goal that was kind of intended accidentally. You know what I mean? If that makes any sense.
It totally does. Yeah. You know, the folks you just mentioned, I have good friends as well. So it's like, it's really neat to, you know, the other people are promoting it. Not, I don't say it to me like, oh, I want it to get, you know, popular or something like that. But it's like, hey, it's other people are talking about it and spreading the word. It's like, that's cool. That's really cool.
All right, Claudio, I love it. It's good stuff. I support Sing a Song and the Flipgrid. I'll have links to that in the show notes, of course.
Cool,
if anybody
cool
would like to go share their song, you may even get me on there to share.
Oh, that'd be
song
great. So, so one of the things that several times that I've tried, and it's like, is one of those where I actually purposely said, well, let me see if I can get this to work. Like, so I would tag, Pharrell Williams, you know. I'm sure I'm saying his name right. You know, I'm happy. Pharrell Williams. I'm sure I'm saying his name right. Yeah. Who was the other? Oh, like tagging Justin Timberlake a couple of times and other people. Like, you know, it's like if somebody like that would just hop, would find it and like, wow, this is neat. And then that we can get spread it out to more people. Like that would have been cool. So it didn't succeed, but I'm like, hey, you know what? That was kind of like strategic, but, and I was like,
it's always worth the try. You never know.
Yeah, it's worth a try. And I was like, you know, I was like, that would be neat. And then people all over the country would be singing. So you never know. If someone's listening to this and they're like, hey, I know somebody, share it with them.
Reach on out. Like, hey,
yeah.
Awesome. Cool. I like it. Let's roll into my first real question. Okay. And talk a little bit about the education space in a larger context. Mm-hmm. My first question for all my guests is always, what is the biggest problem facing education today?
Man, what is out of the, there are a lot of problems. I think one of the things is I think for me that I see is the focus on the result. So, you know, the test scores, the score of a school, it's rating. You know, when I was in school, I didn't get the sense that was the focus. You know, the focus was kind of to learn, and have fun. So I think that's one of the big things that's I think a problem in education is the focus on standards, the focus on the results, and we don't get to see the journey, the what's happening, the learning that's going on. So it's like, oh yeah, cool, that you're doing that, but we need to get this test score. And I think what it's doing is sending the wrong message to students. Like what's important is the grade, and it's not what you're learning, you know, is not important. So I think that's, for me, that's one of the big sticking points in education. It's like, you know, when I started teaching, I've been in education for 20 years, and when I started teaching, I remember like the shift happening, and it was like, oh man, I remember my students. I mean, I always have fun, and when I taught, I always had fun, but it was like it became like, well, it's a factory now of getting these students to have a number to them, instead of being like, man, I'm learning stuff. Something that I can apply later on in my life. So I saw that transition happening, the kind of shift. And I see a lot of, you know, with going to conferences and talking with other educators, where we're trying to make that shift, where it's like, hey, it's about the learning. It's about the journey. It's about the creativeness, the messiness of what learning is, and having fun doing it. And I believe that, like, if all that's done, the kids are learning, you know, they're using different tools, having fun. I think the tests will kind of take care of themselves. That you know, I mean, I don't have any research to back that up. That's just like one of my beliefs. You know, it's like that. Because like I said, when I was in school, it's like, I don't remember all this like stress on the tests. It was like, We did everything in school, and then when the test came, oh, we got to take this test. Okay, do your best, boom, boom, boom. And then, all right, that's done. Now it's like, you know, I never had stress taking the test. It was, you know, the last years that I taught, I remember kids were like, oh my God, the test. And it was like, because it was made such a big deal. And I mean, I remember kids getting stressed out. I was like, man, I do not remember being stress like that as a kid taking tests.
Yeah, I remember the state test being an inconvenience and an interruption to our school
year. Exactly, yeah.
Like, all right, guys, next week you got to go do this thing. It's fine. Like, just go get that done. And then on Tuesday, we're going to be back to this assignment. Don't forget, you got to work on this essay for the class, and you got to be ready to discuss it when we get back. Like, I don't remember. The test was never a thing, right? So this ramp up for testing has been so fast in a lot of ways. And now it's the way of life in our educational system, you know, and I love the way you put it, that we're focused on results and not the journey or not the learning. And it's like the test, because they take it every year in most states, right? They're retaking these major tests every year. They should be a formative assessment. And even if they're a summative assessment, they're still not, like, that's still somehow our focus. And I would never do that in my classroom, right? Like, that's never how I would actually run my class in an educational setting. I mean, I guess, you know, maybe college classes are similar to that, where the final exam is everything. But in general, that's not the way we would do things. And the other thing you said is that it's changed the focus for kids. And that is so true. I think the most pivotal moment in my classroom experience was actually the last thing I did as a classroom teacher. And that was I threw out grades in my classroom because I had this group of kids, my first period's ninth grade English class, my first year at the high school I was at. They were the best group of kids I ever taught in terms of a general classroom setting. They're, you know, they not only intelligent, but just aware and had personalities, each of them. And the class was just so much fun. We had so much fun in that class. And one day I just off the cuff was like, well, I mean, you know, they asked me about something and I talked about being on Twitter and talking about education. I was passionate about it. And they kind of looked at me like I was crazy. And I said, well, what are you guys passionate about? And then they just gave me this deer in headlights look. Like, that made no sense to them. Like, you guys are the most mature group and fun group of individuals I've taught, and you don't have an answer to that question. That's scary.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well then, what do you guys think the point of school is? And all but one kid said, grades. And I said, oh, no, we got a problem. we got to fix.
That's crazy.
Like, okay. I was like, textbook, goodbye. We're reading the Odyssey? Nope, no, we're not, because that's not important right now. This is what's important. You know, and that became the end of my year. The entire fourth quarter was literally dedicated to making my students find what they were passionate about, and I didn't grade it. It was, you know, I had to put something in the grade book because their parents would lose their minds.
Yes.
And so it was either do it or do something else and get an A. And I think all but three kids of all of my ninth grade English classes that year got an A for fourth quarter because that was the option. It was like, do something. Unless you're actively working against me every day in this classroom, you're doing what I need you to do. So keep doing that thing and we'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, and it was so transformative for me as a classroom teacher, but also I think for the students, because it redirected that. It flipped the whole thing on its head. It wasn't about the grade. It wasn't about the goal. It was about the process. It was entirely about the process. And a lot of my kids were like, I didn't figure out what I was passionate about. I go, okay, but did you find some things you aren't passionate about? Yeah. All right. Then you did what I needed you to do. Like, that's what I wanted. I wanted, you know, and that's not what's happening on a macro scale right now. And that's what scares me so much.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. That's the scary thing where, you know, we were to ask, I'm curious if we were to do a statewide survey like that, or even across the country, like, you know, what the results would be. It was like, I probably would say that it's going to be what you said, you know, it's like, great. You know, I think getting into college, you know, that was, when I originally from California, and then when I moved here, it was a culture shock as far as testing. I was like, man, they take testing serious here. It's like hardcore. It's like, you can't, you have to walk around and monitor every kid. You couldn't even sit down. You couldn't even read a book. I was like, man, this is, and it wasn't like that. I don't know if it was a California thing laid back, but, I was like, man, it was like brutal. Like doing that for a whole day and you're like, oh my God, this is more taxing than actually teaching in the class. I was like, geez. Yeah, it needs to be a shift happen, and you know, hopefully some movement that will be like, you know, and I see a lot of that happening. Teachers that are doing some amazing things where it's like, you know, we're not going to focus on grades. We're going to focus on learning. And I think the hard part is selling that. And I hate to say the word selling, but that's just the only thing I can think of. It's because parents want to see, like you said, they want to see like grades. They want to see, you know, because my kids got to get into college and not, you know, at one point, I don't remember when it was. And I said, you know what? Not every kid wants to go to college. That's not their thing. You know, some kids are like, you know, I want to start up a company. you know, I had some kids like, I want to be a plumber. Man, they make some good money being a plumber. Mm-hmm. And
you ever tried to hire somebody to do work in plumbing work at your house?
It's crazy. Expensive. Yeah, you're like, and kids figured out, you know, some of them are like, I'm going to be a welder. And you're like, and then it's like, yeah, not every kid's going to go to college. And I think there was I had an administrator that was like, everybody's going to college. And, you know, I was like, I just said, okay. But it was like, no, it's like, you know, we need mechanics. We need the welders out there. We need the guys that are going to go on those power lines that, you know, we're going to need a guy that's going to go all the way to the 30th, 40th floor to clean that window outside because no one else will do it. And they love, and that's their pattern. They love doing that. They're like, man, I'm out here like painting on glass with water or something like that. But I think it's if we remove the stress of a kid of the test, but also saying like, you got to go to college. And, you know, kid goes to college and then they're in debt and they're not doing what they love to do.
And that's still result focused, right? It's still goal focused or end goal focused, not journey focused. Yeah. And it is the process that's so critical, you know, and it's a conversation I have with my son. My son is 7. He's going into second grade. And last year, you know, I realized all through kindergarten and in the first half of first grade, I would always ask him, what did you learn today? You know, what did you learn? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, but it would always start, I realized I would always start with, you know, what color were you on? Like, what was your behavioral color? Right?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. Like, I'm focused on the wrong things. I actually don't really care that much what color he's on. I care what he learned. And so I redirected that focus and we had a conversation, he and I, on our way home one day about, I was like, which one of these do you think is more important? And as I expected, he said behavior, he said color. And I said, you know what? I've been doing the wrong thing. I've been wrong here. It's like, what you learned is way more important. And I was like, so from now on, that's the first thing that we're going to talk about is what did you learn? And I was like, and even the color, I don't actually even care that much what color you're on. I care more about the why you're on that color.
Yeah.
Like, what did you do and what did you learn from it? So we're going to go back to the same thing. What did you learn?
Yeah.
If you got to, you know, fuchsia or whatever absurd color is the top of their 27 point color chart. Like if you got to fuchsia, like why? What did you do to get to fuchsia? Well, I listened to the teacher and I got my stuff cleaned up faster than everybody else. Okay, cool. Is that something that you care about? Yeah. All right. Well, then what did we learn? How are we going to repeat it? How are we going to make sure that happens again? And, you know, if you're down on chartreuse, like that's bad. Don't be on chartreuse. Like,
yeah, it's funny.
Like, why are you on chartreuse? Also, why is chartreuse a color? I don't understand any of this. Yeah. But I'm not an elementary school teacher, so clearly there's something going on there that I don't get.
Yeah, pearl of white.
Yeah, it's like, anyways.
I think you're spot on. Like, you're spot on this.
It's the why. It's the what did you learn from it? How are we going to repeat it? I think those are those critical components that we're missing. I can be with you there. You know, you mentioned that you see teachers making change. So do you think that is our best path forward? Is it this grassroots of I'm just going to go rogue is how we're going to get this change off the ground? Or is there another path as educators we need to be taking?
I think that's one approach. I think the teachers that are doing that, I totally commend them, because that's, you know, they're going against the grain. And they're going rogue per se. I think that's one approach, and spreading the word about it too is I think we easily get into silos. And you know, so let's say you're a teacher that's like, man, I don't want to do the status quo. I want to do the process. I want to do the journey, but where I'm at, that's not the thing. And I think one of the things that helps is connecting with others that are like-minded like that, like, hey, to get a support system. You know, people have always said, you know, you should go into administration, man. That would be like, and I'm like, man, I have no desire to, I work kind of like in the district office and I see a lot of, it's, man, there's so many politics in it. And I'm like, man, that's not for me. But there's, you know, I think some of it has to happen at that level too, and have those innovative leaders out there. And I've seen and heard of districts that are doing some awesome things, but a lot of it's their teachers, but it's also the support that they get from leaders to take risk. And there's few of them out there. And then you see some stuff they're doing, and they're rocking and rolling. And you know, some of the, unfortunately, what happens a lot of times is like they're like they'll leave because like, hey, I'm gonna go. I'll start a school that's focused like this, and you know,
or go work for Flipgrid
or go work for some. Yeah, and then they're like. And that's, you know, I mean, it's good for the individual, but it's like, man, that's just, I sometimes tell people, like friends of mine, it's like, man, what if we just all like lived in the same area and we were all the teachers at the same school, you imagine what the school would look like. And it's like, they're like, that would be so awesome. And they're like, well, there's a reason where we're at. But I think that's the other thing too, is it's a challenge is finding those others in your school, in your area that are like, man, I'm with you. I want to do this. Let's grassroots it here at our school and just start like spreading that, like you said, wildfire. And I think the hard part is getting everybody, you know, to be on board with that. And, you know, it's, I think it may, depending on the size of your staff, it may be, overwhelming. You know, if you got 300-400 teachers at one school, I you know, that's going to be tough. But man, if you're listening to this, if that's your passion, you want to like go for it, do it. You know, connect with others on Twitter, man. Connect with me, man. I'll support you and spread the word and to do amazing things for the students.
I like it. I stand by it. Let's do amazing things for students. Yeah. Like it. You know, and you're right. It's I heard someone else talking recently about, I don't honestly remember what they were talking about, but they were doing, they were trying some innovative idea in their classroom that they saw. But they said at the same time, now that other people are doing it, I can prove that this isn't just a thing I made up. Like, it's a thing other people are doing. And so I don't look like the crazy person trying something out there. He's like, that's the power of Twitter, is I'm never the only one trying something.
Oh, yeah. I see. When you said that, it's like I'm not the only person. And I'm sure many people have seen this video out there where this guy starts dancing in the middle of this concert. He's like all by himself. It's like used in a lot of conferences and trainings, like, you know, the lone person that the risk, a lot of times it's that second person that starts to join them, and then all of a sudden everybody's like, you said, hey, then we're gonna, you know, that'd be awesome. The whole campus is like that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Yeah, I dig it. Let's move to question two. And my second question for all my guests is, what is something you're doing you wish all educators would do?
Wow. I'm gonna go with something as simple as connecting with other educators on social media. I think that's if you're not on social media, and I don't mean like you know just to be on social media. I think for me, when I decided to connect with others, really when I decided to say, well, let me start this, let me see what this Twitter thing is about, because I remember I had it years ago, and then I was like, I'm not gonna do this. And you know, Facebook was like my family thing. I could see my relatives and friends, high school reunion, stuff like that. And then, but this Twitter thing was like, let me see what that's about. And man, it's been a huge benefit to my career. I'm going to say that it's opened up doors and opportunities that I would say, if I'd not been on there, completely, to be honest, that's just, you know, if you are not doing that, I think every educator should, you know, even if you're just lurking, you know, get on there and lurk a little bit, you know, there's, cause you know, it could be overwhelming. Cause it's a different, I see it as a different, you know, thing. It's not, it is social media, but it's also professional development. There's just so many things I've learned from others. Like people post, I'm like, geez, man, that's a great idea. I'm going to share that. I'm going to use that. I'm going to share that with my teachers. I'm going to try that out. And these, you know, someone says like, hey, I know of someone that's looking for people to do some piloting of something, and sometimes you may get like a perk out of it, maybe. I don't know, but you know, not going into looking for a perk, but I'm just saying sometimes there's some side, you know, some cool benefits out of it. I think that from, if you're not doing it, I would say jump on there. You know, if you don't, if, and then I'll connect with you too, you know, you jump on there, find me, I'll connect back and forth and share. I mean, I think that's, a huge place for a lot of tools that you can find for teachers. Try that out. I would say that's, I think that's one thing. Another thing I would say maybe is just to take risks. You know, I took the risk with the sing-a-song thing. I was like, you know what? Let's see how this goes. Do you have an idea, man? Take a risk on it. You never know what will happen.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think any, if you're taking a risk for the benefit of students, the benefit of your own mental health, the benefit of the educational system on the whole, I'm with you. Take a risk, try something. You know, it's so easy in education to think like, but if we fail, you're failing an entire generation or you're failing an entire group of kids. And it's like, yeah, but are you? Because even if you fail, right? Like, even if kids don't learn as a result of something new you try, isn't there learning in that experience? Yep. I mean, there's always some kind of learning. Mm-hmm. And even if the learning for them is as simple as, oh, my teachers are human, as everyone else is, and people make mistakes, that's a critical life lesson. Like, we need that. And so, you know, sure, maybe their standardized test scores drop a point or two or whatever. And, you know, okay, so, like, at the end of the day, so, did they get something out of it? Because I'm sure they did. I'm sure. You taking a risk, if you were passionate enough to try that thing, it had to have had a benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, going back to the social media side, is there's other people there that are going to cheer you on and say, go for it. Even if you don't support, you know, find yourself in the most supportive school or supportive community area, you can find a supportive community. A PLN, you know, is not that hard to build anymore. You know, there's plenty of people that are here and willing to help support you. So I'm with you. I'm supporting it.
Yeah.
Very good. We got one left. And all I know right. We're coming up on time here, but we got one question left.
Awesome. Awesome.
So my last question for all my guests is, who is the greatest teacher you have ever had?
Oh my gosh. That's, Mr. Hamilton. I've had so many amazing teachers, but he always comes up. In fact, the last couple of years, I've been thinking about him a lot just because of people asking and seeing, like, you know, teacher appreciation. Mr. Hamilton was my woodshop teacher, and I had him for 4 years in high school. And he was just an amazing teacher. What I loved about his class was when you went in there, it was like a family. He was a funny guy, and his approach to, you know, if you've never taken woodshop, it's, you know, you got these tools that can rip your finger off. If you don't do something right, you can get injured. And of all the years I was there, nobody ever did. You know, we made, you know, that was like the first day, it was safety. But one of the things that I'll never forget that he taught me, and I use it till this day, and I apply it pretty much to everything, is measure twice, cut once. And it was just, it's a funny phrase, because you don't want to throw away a piece of lumber that you're using, but it's like, it's a pretty wise philosophical phrase to me. It's like, it's just, I applied it to pretty much a lot of things, like measure twice, cut once, you know, think twice about something, say, you know, look at things. So it's been a lifelong kind of phrase that's helped me in so many other things. One of the things about Mr. Hamilton was treating you as, you know, we were students, but at the same time, we were like, not I don't want to say he was like friend, like our friend, you know, it's like we didn't call him or anything like that, but it was, you know, he was a fisherman. He loved fishing. He talked about the boat he had because he had he lived on a boat. He loved spear fishing. He was, you know, I guess in this day you wouldn't be able to do this, but he brought his harpoon that he used to, you know, to go spear fishing. He talked about it. I was like, and we're like, oh, and I think one of the things that he made himself vulnerable. He shared his family. He shared about himself, and it was like, you know what? Then you can talk about anything with him. And I think that was like the model teacher. And like, I remember going back to visit him. And it was like, man, you know, you made an impact in my life. And, you know, just because you cared is, you know, that cliche-ish, you know, kids don't care what you know. They care. They want to know that you care. That's, I mean, so cliche-ish, but it's so true. Every time I think about him, I'm like, man, you know, wonder how he's doing. And, you know, he might have retired by now. I don't know, but I mean, it's funny thing. So we're talking here and I'm using this desktop that I put together, from stuff that I learned from his class. You know, what he showed me is still affecting my life to this day. I mean, 25 years later. And so, Mr. Hamilton, if you are by any chance listening, thank you.
Yeah, you know, it makes me think about two things there. It's, number one, the bringing your full and authentic self into a classroom, right? And because of our results-driven views on education, it seems like we don't belong in the classroom sometimes, our full, real selves. And with all the outside pressures from other entities and media and just sort of the negative views on teaching, it seems easier to keep yourself out of the classroom and be the English teacher. Mm-hmm. That is what I am all day, every day, you know, and how often I have seen students blown away by the fact that I exist outside of the four walls of my classroom, you know, is always insane to me. And it's, you know, I think that you, like, it is cliche, but they will do so much more for you if they know you care than that, you know, that what they care to know. And it's so much different. So I'm with you 100%. The other thing it makes me think about is how sometimes those lessons we teach are so much more than just the curriculum, right? Like you said, measure twice, cut once. Really great motto to live by. If I were not so impulsive, I might do that. And you know, but it is so much more than about making a desk. It is so much more than that. And it also helps you make a desk. So you really can't go wrong with either of those, mm-hmm. but sometimes those lessons are so much more than what we're directly putting in front of the kids.
Yeah. Totally agree.
Oh. Yeah. Claudio, this has been awesome. This has been a great chat, man.
Oh, you know, yeah. What? I was hoping I was going to be, I'm going to say cerebral this early in the morning.
Well, you saw me. I'm drinking my coffee. Yeah. And it's empty, so I got to go refill. Well, Claudio, thanks again, man. I really appreciate it. How can my audience reach out to you if they'd like to learn more?
Absolutely. Well, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook, Claudio Zavala Jr. You just type all that out. So on all those three there, and you can also follow me on YouTube. So I have a YouTube channel as well, and I share a lot of tips and how to's there. You can also just search Claudio Zavala Jr. or youtube.com/IamClaudius, and then my website is IamClaudius, and so connect with me on any of those platforms, and I'll be glad to reach back out.
Awesome. And of course, links to all of those are in the show notes. You can swipe over, swipe down, and grab those show notes, and you'll have links to all of those. And, you know, I really appreciate the chat, Claudio. It was a ton of fun. I'm glad to finally have you on the show, and appreciate your time. Thank you, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Claudio, thank you so much for joining me on the show. It was so much fun to chat with you. To connect with Claudio, you can find him on Twitter and Instagram at Claudio Zavala Jr. or check out his YouTube channel or his website, iamclaudius.com. All of those links, of course, are in the show notes. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Schreffler, and I'm also on Instagram at the same as well. I love to hear from you guys there, and it's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show. Or check out the feedback page on my website that gives you additional options for feedback, which you can find at bradschreffler.com/feedback. Until next week, remember to measure twice and cut once.
Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio. Your voice is right here.